December 4th, 2013. Holy crap, the year is almost over. Today we're going to talk about a number of things, including EverQuest Landmark and Hearthstone. I think Ellie, the magic expert, has a few things to say. But first, speaking of Ellie, hey, how's it going? How was your Thanksgiving weekend?
It was pretty good. I don't know. I think magic expert is pretty flattering to me, given that I'm actually pretty bad at it, but that's fine. I'll take it. I'll be the resident expert.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
I'll put that on a business card sometime.
We have a guest. Unfortunately, Aralade has been stuck in holiday traffic and is not able to make it today, but we have Aurelia here with us today for the first time on the show. Hey, Aurelia, how was your Thanksgiving weekend?
Hey, it was great. I am an American transplant, so I brought my insidious Canadian influence to not one, but two American Thanksgiving dinners.
Excellent.
And I'm still enjoying leftover turkey sandwiches.
Do you make moose meat or instead of turkey, or what's the deal?
No.
What?
I'm sorry. When I was in Canada, I saw a moose.
What? Well, did you kill it with your bare hands? Because if not, it doesn't count.
She's right.
No, so it was fantastic. I also bought, on the Steam sale, I bought one game, which I thought was admirable restraint for me.
What'd you buy?
Yeah.
Papers, Please.
Oh, sweet. That game was excellent. Good choice.
It was excellent, although last night I had a nightmare about my society descending into a sort of creepy dystopia and then having to plot a way to evacuate my family. So I think I'm going to stop playing that game for a little while.
Maybe pull back before bedtime.
Yeah, a little, yeah. Anyway, so all is well with me.
Excellent. Ellie, have you bought anything on the Steam sale?
You know I have.
I do?
Well, I mean, because there was a Steam sale, I always buy something.
Oh, okay.
What did you get? I bought a Scapegoat because a Scapegoat 2, which I already bought at PAX, isn't out yet. And then Spelunky was on cheap sale.
Nice.
And I've been meaning to play that, and it's a sort of roguelike whatever thing. And then I bought a game that I'm going to stream for everybody. I think I bought Dark Souls.
Oh my god! I will watch you play Dark Souls. You're actually pretty patient with games, so that you might actually do okay with that.
Sometimes. I think if I have a reason to keep playing it, like it's the 24-hour marathon, I can be patient. But, if it's just me, I might do what I did with Demon's Souls, which is play it for like an hour, die about six times in the first tutorial, well, what accounts for a tutorial area, and then turn it off and never play it again. It's in my closet.
It's in your closet. It's been banished to your closet.
Yeah, I don't know. I heard the game is like if you turn left out of the starting area, then you run into something that just kills you, or something to that effect. And I just it's the sort of thing that seems like it would be fun to share with people. So what the hell?
Oh yeah, no, that's a great stream. I will definitely watch that. Well, I've been trying to save money, and also I own a lot of games, so I haven't bought anything on the Steam sale, which I think means I've become everything I hate. I don't know how that happened.
You could buy Wolf Among Us. That came out that's down to $15 today.
That is really tempting.
I'm
gonna wait till the Christmas sale.
That already?
I have the first episode, but there's the four more, so
okay.
It's the pack.
You could buy the episode separate?
Well, I got the review code from Telltale. La-di-da! Games journalism!
I thought you were a game critic, Lior.
Yes! Game criticism, more specifically.
Did you write a review?
I did. Well, I talked about it on the podcast and said it was awesome, and I told a bunch of people to buy it today, so really, I think that was worth it for them.
They should send me one next time, too, because I have sent many people their way.
It's true. No, it was really, really great. I am planning on buying it. I'm going to do it at the winter sale, because I'm pretty sure it will be off for about the same amount, and that will be after I've bought all my Christmas presents, so my budget will have a little more wiggle room.
And the second episode will be out, hopefully, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I think that's soon. I tried to finish off the first episode the other day, and my game, it won't load. Like, the game just doesn't load anymore for me. It I can hear it, but it just does a black screen. So I want to know what happens in, like, the last, I don't know, half an hour.
Yeah, you do want to know what happens in the last half an hour.
I know!
Some of the best parts of the game are in the last half an hour.
I've already smacked Mr. Toad around, so, you know.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
My sordid shame of Toad smacking.
I don't know if I punched him. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. No, I did. I did. But it was a last resort. He was being very cagey.
I gave him what for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I knocked him around a little bit.
Plus,
so,
this kid is super cute, so.
So cute. I know. I felt so bad. I was just like, why are you hitting my daddy Toad? And oh, my God. I'm a terrible, terrible person. It's like in Heavy Rain where you don't get your kid's dinner on time. And it's just like, why, daddy? Why? And I'm like, oh, no. Games. Anyway, we have a few things to talk about today. One of the reasons Aurelia is here in particular is because we've been having an interesting back and forth lately about EverQuest Landmark. And let me preface this by saying it looks really cool. If the folks who are listening or watching this don't know, EverQuest Landmark is sort of the first stage of the EverQuest Next. It's a lot like Minecraft meets an MMO in that it's got the... You collect materials and use it to build, but the building tools I hear are amazing. I was listening to another podcast about it, and they're talking, you know, you can do really good paint jobs and easy, like, leveling and really good building. So it's really sort of the tools that you'll see come to fruition in EverQuest Next. Now, the interesting part of EverQuest Landmark is that they have come out with alpha and beta pre-order packages that range, I think, from like $20 or $30 to $100. The actual alpha and beta don't start until, I think it's February and March?
Yes. End of February and then end of March, respectively.
Yeah. So there's been a bit of controversy about whether that is necessarily a good deal. So Aurelia, did you actually go ahead and get one of the pre-orders?
I haven't yet. I'm still deciding. I'm really excited, and I'm definitely going to play the game, but I haven't decided it if I want to pay for the pre-access. In part, actually, because of the conversation that we were having the other day in the IRC chat room, and I agree that paying for unfinished games is a really questionable practice, particularly when, you know, it's a profit model. And so, you know, there comes a point at which it's kind of exploitative of the players to be asking them to essentially pay to do quality control for the company.
And content building also.
I mean, that I think is a slightly more complicated question because to some people that is a feature of Landmark. And I think that that's more on the line. You know, whether or not you think that that is a fun, cool thing, or whether you think that that is an exploitation of the community, I think that's more of a matter of opinion. But I think that it's pretty clear that making people pay for alpha is a dodgy practice at best, because you know you're paying for an unfinished game, and this is becoming so much more obvious. I mean, so much more widespread. When I was looking at the Steam sale this Thanksgiving, one of the reasons I wasn't as tempted to buy as many games is that something like half the games available for the Thanksgiving sale on Steam are alphas or betas, the early access stuff. And I've bought a couple of these over the past 3 or 4 months, and some of them are pretty great. Like when I bought the early access for Don't Starve, I enjoyed it immensely, and I actually didn't really notice the difference between that and what I would consider a finished game. In comparison, I have bought some that were actually terrible, actually unplayably bad. And so I've become really wary, and I just stopped buying anything early access on Steam unless I've read outside reviews that say it's really fantastic. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I bought Minecraft while it was still in beta, right?
Minecraft is always the big example that gets trotted out of
right, but games. But the thing about Minecraft is... Well, at least when I bought it, and I think even well before I bought it, the game was in a fully playable state.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I don't know. I mean, I felt like I was buying a game that I could never have any improvements to and have a complete experience for Minecraft, right? It's Legos, and I mean, it's Legos on the computer, and the only thing that gets added, well, a lot of stuff has been added, and my feelings about Minecraft are weird now because it's no longer just a building game, right? Like, there's a whole adventure thing that I don't quite get. I struggle because having participated in a number of betas, and sort of that sort of thing for a long time, I like doing it. I like being a part of the community that's helping people test and polish their games and things like that. I have also done things like pre-ordered the Warcraft expansion on the promise of getting into beta early, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know, the EverQuest Landmark one, I think, stands out to me in a way that's sort of frustrating. And along with, like you said, a lot of things on Steam. I feel a little bit better giving people money who might not be able to complete their game early without the early pay. But EverQuest Next is going to happen, regardless of whether we buy it or not.
Do you think this is sort of a natural extension of the whole Kickstarter generation? You know, the trend towards that of laying out money before you see something? I mean, even though Sony doesn't strike me as a company that needs the money, I think the reason you're seeing all these alphas popping up on Steam is because it's already been established that people will spend money on ideas and things that don't exist yet or exist barely.
I mean, people are impatient. I mean, I think that they've learned that for better or for worse, there's a certain percentage of the community that is just so excited about the game or the promise of the game that they will put, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20, $50 forward for a chance to play it even in an imperfect state. And whether or not that gets you a better game or a worse game in the end, I don't know. I do think that there are a lot of different factors. I mean, I definitely have a little bit more sympathy for prepaying, like Ellie was saying, when it's an indie company, when you feel like, okay, me buying, you know, me laying down this $20 now is the difference between the developers being able to make rent while they work on their game or not. I like to support indie games, and so that for me is a lot more compelling. And as a rule, if I'm going to support something on Kickstarter, I only do it if I'm able to still be comfortable with it if it turns out to be a donation to a sort of creative concept.
Right.
But like you said, with Sony, I mean, Sony doesn't have a whole lot of goodwill to begin with, and they're a major company. So the idea that they are going to charge for early access, and not only early access, but early access to a game that is going to be free to play. I don't know if everyone is aware of that, but Landmark is going to be free to play.
Is Landmark going to continue to be a thing on its own past
yes.
when Next comes out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Should we explain what Landmark is or what the
sure,
difference
why don't you
is?
Go ahead and talk about it? I think you probably know more than I do.
Just really basically, the concept is that EQ Landmark is going to be a separate MMO that is going to precede EverQuest Next. So they're going to be two separate MMOs, and EverQuest Next is the next generation of EverQuest, and it's going to be a very sort of, they'd get mad at me for calling it traditional, but a more traditional MMO where, you know, there's character progression, and that's character progression is the main gameplay mechanic. In contrast, EverQuest Next is, like you said, a Minecraft type building game where you can use this supposedly really advanced building toolset to create and destroy things in the world. And there's not going to be, you know, classes or character progression as such. You will be able to explore the world in order to unlock new building tools and new terrain, paint textures and stuff like that, new materials to build with. The main point is building. And then the idea is that you'll be able to create entire worlds. And so, for example, if you wanted to host if you wanted to host like a D&D game and like create an MMO world for your D&D game and then DM it in the virtual world, you can do that. Or you can just build, and Sony is going to let players take those items that they build and possibly incorporate them into their EverQuest world. So there will be some flow between the two games, but they will be separate. So hopefully that is helpful.
Yeah, so I think that sounds a little bit more nuanced, I guess, than what I have heard and use as fuel to rant about.
Yeah, I hate to ruin your anger with information, but
it makes it a lot more interesting, I think. But I mean, you know, my understanding was that you have a chance of having your creations show up in EverQuest next, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that I felt about it and still continue to feel about it is that as a person who pre-buys whatever the package is to get into the landmark beta that doesn't start for however long, which is additionally ridiculous, you know, I'm paying you, Sony, for the opportunity to build things so that you don't have to for your game. And that to me is, that's where I feel like the exploitative nature of this whole situation really comes from.
Mm-hmm.
They have an art team. They have a world building team. That's their job. I don't know why I'm doing their job for them.
Well, I think because it's awesome.
But it's not awesome. It's awesome if you get to do that and get paid to do that. It's awesome if one of the options that you have is to customize part of the world that you live in. But if their world is relatively static and just it just so happens that some of that art is, you know, player, I guess, generated, community generated, let's say it that way, that's fine. But the community, the community generation, I don't understand why I have to pay to be part of the community that can help generate the content. I mean, like,
well, you don't though. It's, you only have to do it to get early access. So.
I mean, you only have to do it to get early access until it's, so it was free to pay play, and then I have to pay $5 for every building tool, or you know, every time my hammer breaks, I have to buy some new nails or some shit.
It's not necessarily the case. You don't actually know what the pay structure is, and so I'm not saying that that won't be the case. I'm saying that it's as yet undetermined. I know that there are claims, which are something like land deeds, that you will be able to buy either, I think, with real money or in-game currency, but I don't think you have to buy the tools.
Yeah, that's the part that I think is more ambiguous for me, is the fact that the people who pay for early access, and of course the earlier the better, if there's a virtual land rush.
Right.
Right. People are going to want to get the good spots.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some sort of discussion that there might be, and Aurelia, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the templates, possibly you'll be able to sell them between players. And
yes, you will. That's confirmed.
Yeah. So there's going to be a possible tangible monetary benefit to being one of the $100 package buyers, so you get into alpha. That's where it starts to get a little bit ishy for me.
I don't know that that's where it starts, but I would agree that it continues there.
Yeah, I think a good comparison might actually be something like Second Life, where you will, in some sense, have ownership of a certain digital parcel of land. And it's not completely clear. I mean, they haven't released any information about pricing structures. They've just talked about how you'll be able to have claims. And obviously you'll either have to earn them with in-game means or you'll have to use microtransactions. And I think it'll end up being some combination of both. Sort of like in Hearthstone, where you can use gold to buy your packs or you can pay real money.
Don't buy packs in Hearthstone.
Save that for the Hearthstone conversation. but I think that one of the things that is questionable, like Lior said, is that, you know, you can pay this money for the early access, and then, you know, are you going to be able to go in there and snap up all of the quote-unquote good areas of land? Maybe. I don't know. I don't think that we have enough information about that yet. I have other concerns that aren't even related to, you know, the ownership questions. I read an interview with one of the developers about the possibility of griefing and trolling. I mean, because it's a completely destructible world. And so you can destroy things, at least in the sort of general world, so in an area not claimed by anyone, whether you built them or not. So somebody builds a bridge and you come along, and unless they have a particular mechanism in place to protect it, you can just break it. And then they come back later and it's gone. And they've also talked about how they envision communities developing around themes, because the tool set is really robust. So you could build, the example that they gave was you can build a medieval village or like a Star Wars pod racing track. And so there's this, you know, possibility that someone's going to have a medieval village and then somebody's going to come along and like build a giant transformer in the middle and like crush everyone's houses and stuff like that. And so in the interview, when this question was asked, the response was, I thought, a little not reassuring. He said that, yes, there will always be griefing, but we're going to set it up in a way such that there won't be any reason to grieve except to grieve. Like, and that was
okay.
as if for some people that's not reason enough,
or isn't the primary reason.
Well, you know, there's a, you guys probably know, there's a theory in game design of the TTD, or the time to dicks, and I think that's going to apply very much to
EverQuest
and Landmark. Yeah, I mean, how long is it going to take until someone comes along and just, you know, turns the mountain into a giant penis?
Especially with a free-to-play system. And so he did say that there would be, quote-unquote, mechanisms that the players can use to protect themselves. He didn't go into details.
Give us $3 a day to make your bricks indestructible.
I wasn't completely convinced by the explanation. I thought that he sidestepped the question a little. So one of the reasons that I haven't jumped in yet, and, you know, paid for any kind of beta access is because I don't know how that's going to work out. And as I get older, I just lose my patience for dealing with that sort of nonsense. So we'll see. But I think that's going to be a factor. I think you will, no matter how, because people are just so creative in their willingness to be jerk asses. So no matter what mechanism they introduce, somebody is going to try and ruin some people's fun. I know that there'll be some instancing, and I know that there'll be some sort of, you know, land claim thing so that people can't build near you, but there'll be people who try and circumvent it.
Well, and it still doesn't mean they can't turn the general landscape into ridiculousness.
Well, yeah, and you look at, I mean, Second Life, I think, is an excellent comparison. And you look at some of the things that people do in Second Life, both in griefing and in establishing their own homes, virtual homes, and in very ways that I think most people would not agree with morally, you know, sort of overly, unpleasantly sexual deviancy kind of things. I'm trying to come up with a nice way to say this. I'm Canadian. And as well as, I mean, griefing is terrible in Second Life.
Channel the American part.
Yeah, I know, right? So, you know, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see when you give people those kind of creative tools. I think there's constantly in Second Life, kind of, at least during its heyday, a bit of a tug of war between the, you know, the griefers and the giant dicked furry camps.
One of the other things that I thought was interesting is that a lot of the interviews I've seen, like the early access playtesting, is they've demonstrated that using the tools is actually pretty hard. A lot of the early access playthroughs that I've read, the games journalists, or whatever you want to call them, have had a really hard time making anything look really great. So, you know, they'll be sitting down next to a Sony developer, art guy. And Ellie, this is one of the reasons I'm not as worried about that thing you talked about, because they clearly do have a very robust and very large art team working on the EverQuest Next thing.
Sure.
And it's very clear that they want EverQuest Next, because EverQuest Next is going to basically competing with all of these user-developed worlds. And so they want EverQuest Next to be the best one that everyone will want to play, and the Landmark stuff to just sort of be a niche, like, buildy thing almost. So they have a very vested interest in making EverQuest Next beautiful and appealing, more so than just player-developed stuff. And the difference between what the art guys were coming up with and what the games journalists were coming up with, it looked, some of their stuff looked really, really, really ugly. You know, awkwardly shaped buildings, stuff that just didn't work. And I think that that's one of the dangers too, is it's not necessarily that people are even going to be griefing, but you're going to have 7-year-olds trying to build things in your village. And even if they're trying really hard, they might just suck at it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are not artists, right? And there are reasons for that.
And that's another comparison to Second Life. There's just going to be a lot of mediocre, bloggy content. And so it's going to be tricky, I think, to see how it works out. I think it's sociologically sort of fascinating, but I don't know if I'm going to want to play it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing about that is that the ugly stuff makes the good stuff better. So, and it makes it stand out. I mean, I think that's just sort of a general art concept anyway. You have to sort of have bad art in order to see good art in a lot of ways. Because you don't have, otherwise you don't have a frame of reference, right? I mean, the Neverwinter Night Online, Neverwinter Online, was that a game? Mm-hmm. That was that game, right?
Yeah, that's that game.
So their Foundry thing, right, with the user-built quests and whatever. I mean, I in the brief time that I played that through betas and stuff, I saw a wide range, and some of them were really just dumb and bad, and others, like, actually were pretty good. So,
yeah.
And then the same thing is very much true of Rift Dimensions. I mean, my dimension versus, like, the ones that get shown off as part of the, you know, look at the awesome stuff you can do with dimensions is, I mean, you know, people are,
yeah,
really...
my dimension's full of, like, half-abandoned staircases.
I, like, took all the free stuff that they gave me for Christmas and just, like, arranged it. Right. Like, that's basically my dimension, and I have, like, a ramp. And, like, that's it. So,
yeah.
But Rift Dimensions are awesome. I mean, they're also hidden from the public. They're not, you can't see, like, whoever's giant, you know, penis castle. I mean, I'm not super worried about the bad art hiding the good art or marring the landscape or anything.
Well, I think, you know, Minecraft, a heavy, heavy, heavy part of the Minecraft user base is, like, kids. It's, you know, 7 to 15-year-olds. It's a huge, huge thing at that age group. So, trying to target that in a landmark, I think, is smart. And I think you're totally right, Aurelia. If kids have a difficult time being able to build and gathering their resources to make what they want, I think that is going to be something of a barrier.
I bet kids are better at it than games people.
Maybe, yeah.
No, I mean, they're good at learning.
Yeah, because the tools are... I mean, just to be clear, I'm not down on the people who suck at making pretty things. Like, my Minecraft house looks like I'm 12, because I just want to hide from the spiders. I'm not in it, you know, to make... to me, the Minecraft block system is pretty limiting aesthetically, so...
You just have to zoom out far enough. If you build big enough and you zoom out far enough, it all becomes round.
Yeah, yeah, you just want, like, a builder's paradise. So if Landmark can provide that, then I think it's going to do pretty well. I'll definitely play it. I'm looking forward to it. I will play it. I will definitely give EverQuest Next a shot, too. I think it's going to be interesting to see just how next-gen it truly
it's,
is.
It's surprising to hear you say that you're going to play a new MMO.
I think that was sarcasm.
just a little.
I will say that if I do end up getting a beta access, I will definitely report back. And
good, yes,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I am hopeful that I'm incorrect, that it is just a grab for negatively priced labor.
I will say, in their defense, it's cheaper than the early access stuff for Neverwinter was. Neverwinter had a $200 Dritz pack, Dritz stored, and I don't even know how to say that. A $200 pack that included a spider mount. And judging from the number of spiders I saw running around, a lot of people actually bought it. So they are in some ways holding back by pricing their most expensive package at only $100.
Okay, people, stop spending $200 on early access for MMOs, okay? Just stop.
Like, unless you personally know the developers.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. Well, speaking of betas, Hearthstone, all three of us are now in the beta for Hearthstone. They're supposed to be going to open beta this month sometime, they said, being a month after BlizzCon. So maybe by Christmas we'll be doing it. I got an interesting survey the other day for Hearthstone players, in which they asked things like, you know, how badly would you like to arrange tournaments with friends? In which I was like, very, very, very badly. But also, what extra things would we pay for in Hearthstone? And
of course,
at the end of the day, I would pay extra for almost nothing. So I'm interested to see how well the monetization is going to work. They're like, would you pay extra for new placemats, playmats? And I'm like, no. Would you pay extra for fancy customization of your hero? And I'm like, no, no. The only thing I would pay extra for would be new card packs.
Don't do that. Don't buy card packs with gold.
Not with gold or not with real money?
Or with real money. With either.
Why? What else are you supposed to use your gold for?
You should be playing Arena.
That's true. That is the best way to do it.
Because the Arena is 150 coins, and you get a pack out of it. And if you suck at the Arena, you still get some dust, right? But if you're okay at Arena, then you'll get another pack or the dust equivalent of another pack or something like that. I mean, the only time you should really buy packs directly is if you very specifically want to fill out your collection ASAP. That's the only reason, financially speaking, the only reason you should do it is that. And, you know, I didn't quite realize that when I started and I spent a couple of gold on a couple of packs. I have not put any dollars in and I don't intend to. Although Mechaturk is awesome, I don't really think that it's worth $2 for this game because of the rest of the things that we are going to talk about. But yeah, don't do that. And the Arena's fun, and even if you lose, even if you just lose, I guess if you lose every time, it's probably not as good. If you go 0-3 every single Arena you ever play, it might be less financially good. You don't go 0-3 every time.
Oh, a fair number of times I go 0-3. My best record is 3-3. Oh, okay. So.
Well, then I won't tell you how I did on my free Arena.
How did you do? Ooh, you are now the most successful Arena cat.
Really?
All of us. Yeah, three has.
I literally
is the record
have played one
this.
Arena.
It's all that magic experience.
It is. It must be all that magic experience. I was actually really curious how you would do it Arena, because the rest of us who have not played Magic or any other trading card game before were terrible.
How's Kinch done? He's played a bunch of Magic.
I actually don't know. You're right. I should check in with you. I haven't heard yet. Okay, so Ellie, speaking of as the experienced Magic player, maybe not the expert, but experienced.
Resident expert.
Let's downplay this a lot. That way nobody can actually say bad things about me when I get something wrong about Magic.
Right. No, I got in a little kerfluffle. Blog kerfluffle. Ooh.
I saw it. I tried to get in on it, but I didn't know how hard to come down on you.
Oh.
Or the other person.
Thanks. you saved it for the podcast. But
that's
about
right.
Hearthstone and how it's simple and it is basically bringing down the whole trading card game industry with its simplicity. And my argument was, you know, I don't know. Yeah, but a whole bunch of us who are playing Hearthstone would not be playing another trading card game.
I definitely fall into that category.
So unless you go on from this to play another trading card game at some point, then it doesn't matter. Then you don't matter to that discussion. I think that Hearthstone bringing people into the trading card or the collectible card game genre is good. It can't be bad. Like, the more people that are exposed to this, the more people will consider, the more opportunity there is for somebody to consider a different, more complex, more deep, whatever you want to call it, game, which means the more likelihood there is to get a new Magic player, or a new Soulforge player, or a new Hex player, or whatever the hell else is that. I mean, there's tons of them out there, right? So I don't see how that's bad, and I don't see why anybody should say just because you play Hearthstone you don't matter, right? Even though I kind of just said that.
I was going to say, didn't you just say that?
No, what I mean is that, like, if you are not ever going to play another game, then I guess you increase the profile of trading card games, which is good.
I was going to say, even if the only thing that you do is be part of a statistic that, you know, say, so I think WoW at its peak had, what, 12 million subscribers or 14 million or something like that. And that fact alone being part of the reason that so many other MMOs have been able to get investors and get funding and get off the ground. That's part of the, I mean, people like to hate on WoW, but its success is part of the reason that anyone was willing to actually believe that MMOs could be a worthwhile investment, could be a worthwhile market. And I think the same thing might end up being, I mean, say 10 million people play Hearthstone, even casually. Then, you know, the next person who tries to come up with a new trading card game, maybe they get a little bit more of a receptive audience when they're looking for, you know, looking for investors or looking for someone to support their project. And I think, I mean, I've never played Magic. I've never really been involved in trading card games. I've been playing video games since I was 17. I've always primarily been involved in strategy games and in MMOs. I basically just tried Hearthstone because you guys have been talking about it and I wanted to give it a try. And I thought it would be interesting to try something that I knew was entry level, because I just frankly did not want to invest the time to get up to speed on a game as old and as complicated as Magic. So I think that Hearthstone is nice because it offers like an entry berth for people who maybe feel like they want to test the waters without spending all kinds of time researching something.
I think Hearthstone makes a lot of assumptions. I'm trying to think how to say this, because I think it makes a lot of assumptions about... Maybe it's just that as a person who has played trading card games or card games in general before, I have a better understanding coming to Hearthstone in terms of what abilities are available, what's good, what's not as good, you know, obviously how to play Arena, that sort of thing. You know, I think that the fact that I can come and play it and do reasonably well makes sense. It means that I hope that it means that there's a skill curve there, right? That people can progress along. And I certainly like don't know what the hell I'm doing in Hearthstone. I mean, like, I don't know whether a 3-2 is better than a 2-3, is better than whatever, given any given situation, and, you know, learning when to attack and when not to attack and how to order plays and all that shit. There's plenty of depth there. So the guy that said that there wasn't any depth is just wrong. There isn't as much as there is in Magic. Magic is a very complex game, and Magic has gone through big changes to simplify it in the last 10 years. Like, they have this whole thing called New World Order, where they completely changed the entire underlying mechanics of things and tried to put everything style of play. Like, everything goes, there's a stack, right? And everything goes on the stack, and you can respond or not respond based on the stack, and that's how it goes, right? You know, Hearthstone doesn't have that kind of level of interaction. Hearthstone doesn't let me respond to what you're doing while it's your turn, which is probably my biggest disappointment with it, is that it's very clearly like intended to work asynchronously.
But I think, I mean, that's beneficial for its audience. I mean, I like that fact, definitely. It's, you know, I can, there are certain points, if my opponent, it's their turn, I can kind of slack off and go see what the cat's doing and... You know, this casual scrub, I like that part, definitely. As opposed to feeling like, always on!
And it opens up a ton of things. I mean, I think in the world of tablets and phones, I mean, like, asynchronous play is awesome. Like, it's awesome for me to be able to make my move in the morning, you know, and then, like, an hour later come back and make my next move or whatever. And yeah, the game will drag on over the course of 5 days, but who cares, right? If it's just, like, me and you and we're friends playing, like, who cares?
Right.
And it opens up things like tournaments that start in the morning and you get paired, like, across everybody, and you say, okay, I'm going to do my arena draft first thing in the morning, and maybe I'll play my first game. And then 4 hours later, I have a couple hours break, so I'm going to earn, you know, 20-minute break, so I'm going to play another game. And, like... I mean, being able to do that stuff is awesome, right? And if you have a lot of player-on-player interactions, then everybody has to be lined up, you know, their time has to be lined up. And so breaking that away, it makes a lot of sense, and I get it.
But I do understand that it simplifies things. I don't, the Hearthstone, it's really given me a lot of cognitive dissonance, which I'm excited to be able to use in conversation correctly. But it has, because I've always been one of those people who is like, you know, wow, casual, stupid, simplifying things. And I will still do that to this day. And it's made me kind of sit back and go, well, Hearthstone's more casual, and that's why I'm playing it. So can I really be that cranky about the casualification
yes.
of Warcraft? Okay. And I think the problem is that, and this is, I wrote a post about this in relation to Hearthstone. The problem is that WoW went more casual and pretty much every MMO in the market decided to follow that, so you really didn't have any other options.
Yeah.
And I think as long as Hex and Soulforge and those games that are sort of also coming out, you know, TCGs right now, and are complicated and do attract, you know, that a different audience, then it's okay to have a casual game available out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it might make Magic get off their ass and actually come out with a online client that works.
Their online client is ugly.
And it is actually really bad. There's this whole kerfuffle, and I'm sure you guys actually may have heard of it because, like, it was one of those things that blew up in the internet. But they've had, like, they have daily tournaments and online sort of championships and big tournaments. And a couple weeks ago, like, people, like, stayed home and spent 7 hours in a row trying to play in this world championship qualifying, you know, thing. And at the end of the day, 8 rounds in around 50 minutes, you know, that's what the clock says, and that's how long it takes. So 7 hours into the day, it crashed, and they came back up, and they said, oh, we lost all of the state. We're going to start again tomorrow. Good luck. Here's a couple packs. And, like, people flip their shit. And, like, understandably so. This is not something that 10 years into an online product should be happening. So, and the thing is, if people have a place to go, like, if all of those people, instead of putting their money into doing Magic drafts and Magic tournaments and shit like that, if they're all going to go off and play Hearthstone, going to go play Soulforge, going to go play any of these other options that aren't going to take their money and time away from them, like, that's awesome. Like, now they got to get their stuff together, right? Like,
it's good to keep, you know, the king on his toes, sort of, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that same thing happened to Warcraft too, right? I mean, like, Warcraft sort of pulled back away from a lot of the things that sort of helped that it did well, and it pulled back away from it a lot. And then games like Rift came in, and, like, you know, Rift didn't make a huge dent in Warcraft, but it showed that there's still a market for that, and it showed, and, like, you know, some of the other games did some of the casual stuff better. Lord of the Rings has done casual very well.
Yeah.
I am pretty sure the only reason we can do transmog in WoW is because Rift had such a good wardrobe system. I think that finally pushed them to, you know, do something for the casuals.
Well, and, like, Star Wars had the companions and stuff, and so now we're getting garrisons, right? I mean, like, they have always taken good things from other games. And I think that's good.
So, Aurelia, you just recently started Hearthstone. How do you find it? Are you going to keep playing it now that you've given it a shot?
I agree with you that spending real money on it is not, it's not that kind of game for me. I think of it actually pretty similar to the sort of casual game that I have on my cell phone. That, yep. You know that you play while you're waiting for the subway or something. It's sort of like Bejeweled for me. And I don't mean that as an insult. I really love Bejeweled.
it's okay. I've played so many hours of Peggle and Bejeweled and Bejeweled-like games.
But that's the role that it fills in my life. I don't intend to do a large amount of research into becoming a strategy master. As I said, I'm really into strategy games, so if I want something that's really strategic, I'm going to sit down and play, you know, Europa Universalis 4 or something of that nature. But I like that it's, you can have a quick, discrete game. You can have, you know, a 20-minute game. There's a clear start, a clear end. You know what's going to happen. There's a rhythm. And it's just something that you can do fun without getting overly committed. It's not like, you know, joining a raid or doing an instance or something where it's more of a time commitment, more of a social obligation. So I like that. I've been basically playing it like a puzzle game. I improved really, really, really rapidly. I mean, the first game I played, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. And I lost to the AI, which was just embarrassing. But then after playing, I don't know, three or four games, I ended up getting a lot better. I ended up winning a bunch of the, you know, the play matches. And I definitely felt like I was getting the hang of it. Like, okay, I should do things in this particular order. I decided that I had a particular strategy that appealed to me, you know, based around, you know, different minion procs and stuff like that. To, you know, like card drawing minion procs and stuff like that. And so it was fun. I think I've probably played about maybe 10 to 12 hours in total.
Sounds like you are having a good time.
Yeah, playing it casually, I think, is what I'm going to continue to do, maybe an hour or two a week.
Nice. How about you, Ellie? I know you kind of seem to have a love-hate relationship with Hearthstone. Do you think you'll keep playing it?
Yeah, I think my statement was that it's just fun enough to make me not quit, I think. which is basically saying the same thing. I feel like it is a game that I can throw a couple hours into here and there and do fine with. I mean, I'm so used to, for this kind of game, like needing to set aside 3 or 4 hours, right? I mean, it's half a day when I want to play a draft or something like that. It just, the drafts that I play are the ones where you get to play all of the rounds, as opposed to the one where as soon as you lose, you're out. Because I usually when I sit down, I want to do it, right? And so I take the time to do it. And I have to set aside that time. If I do happen to win all of them, I would have to be there for the whole time. So I feel like, I don't know, I'm not sure. I'm still not, my mind's not totally made up. I think that there are a set of cards that are clearly better than other cards. The constructed play is a place that I do not think I will spend a lot of time. And when you only have one set of cards to draft, there's only so many of those draft decks you want to build. Maybe it's 50 or 60 or whatever, and maybe they'll have released more cards by the time that I hit that number. But the constructed stuff, like, it has all the same problems as Magic. It's expensive and time-consuming to get the set of cards to be competitive, and then you have to spend a bunch of time, like, building your deck and figuring out what other people are playing and then figuring out how you can play against that. And it's just like, to be competitive, and it's hard not to be a little bit competitive in a game that is strictly competitive. So I don't know. I think I'll keep playing it a bit. I haven't leveled all the heroes up. Basically, I found that I really like the Warlock.
Nice.
Well, card drawing is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and the Warlock's basically 2 draws for every turn.
Yeah, and health is... you have to get used to using your health as a resource, and that's actually something that took a while for me to do in Magic also. Mm. The only time your health matters is when it hits 0.
Right.
I mean, there are certain other thresholds, right? Like against a mage, when you're 6 or lower and they can fireball you or whatever. I mean, like, you have to know those things. But when you're at 18 health versus 16 or 14, like, that's 2 more cards I could have, and then I'm doing a lot better than you, which is why, like, the card, I mean, all of the card drawing's good, right? So
yeah, for me, I'm really enjoying it. It's, you know, dipping my toes into the waters of min-maxing card games, so I have gotten to the point where I'm looking at charts and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I like Constructed for that reason, because, you know, you figure out what the meta is. Look, I can use terms for absolutely. Card games. And then, you know, try and make decks to go with that. I'm not that good at deck building.
Yeah.
So that's something I definitely need to work on. But it definitely piques my min-maxing spreadsheet urges in a nice casual environment where it I don't sink hours and hours into it.
I think they really need to add the ability to play your friends, though. I agree with you that that is one thing that I think is...
Do they not have that?
No.
I thought they had that.
You can play one-on-one, but you can't do, like, a tournament. I want to do a tournament.
Oh, well, so you'd have to organize it outside, basically.
Well, even then, you can't do arena versus friends. So you couldn't do a draft tournament.
Ah.
So, and that's what I would want to do. I would love to have, you know, say there are a dozen of us or half a dozen of us who are playing it. That, to me, would be the biggest draw, to keep coming back, because I'm not necessarily going to be able to play against you guys, but I would love to see, you know, Kinch versus Ellie showdown.
I don't even think that's true, because like we could well, I mean, and we should do that, like, and I want to, but yeah, I think that just playing in those situations, right, like, maybe, like, if we come up in the first round, I mean, like, you don't always win, like, the better person doesn't always win a game like this, but I mean, over time, that will happen. But just playing is the best way to get better. I mean, and playing against people that are better than you is always a good way to get better. As long as you're willing. I mean, it is. As long as you're willing to evaluate what you did, right?
That's a little bit. Coming from someone with lots of experience who's probably going to come out at the top of the heap, though.
Yeah, I would pay your entry fee, honestly, if it got people to play, like, in a sort of organized way.
I will say, in defense of Hearthstone, I will say that I have had fun even when I lost. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm still at the point where I'm learning things. So even mm-hmm. when I don't feel upset, or I don't feel like it's, you know, not fun when I lose a game. So
how have you felt about the fairness of Hearthstone?
I haven't done an arena yet, so I don't know if I should even...
I wouldn't worry about the arena. And so how do you feel about it in Constructed? Because I feel like Constructed is less fair than arena. Personally.
I think that I've been playing people who are easy enough that it hasn't mattered. I haven't lost any of my play games.
Okay.
And I haven't seen a lot of people playing cards that were really overpowered. Like, I haven't seen a lot of people with epic cards yet. So I just don't think I've gotten to the phase where it's mattered. But I would definitely be upset if I felt like skill had absolutely nothing to do with it, and it was just facing down somebody with a, you know, a deck full of epic cards. That would be a little frustrating, because I would feel like I wasn't learning anything. I wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the biggest thing with Constructed, right? Is like, if you, they don't seem to do a great job of segregating people who have been playing and opening packs. I mean, I guess if you're playing ranked, you kind of do, but your rank doesn't really go down.
No, though that's changing at launch, so it's kind of gibbled right now. But it's true, I'm working on getting the Dust of Craft in Ysera, because it's a great card. But I'm going to feel really guilty when I play it. Like, I'm sorry, I'm playing a Legendary, I'm sorry.
Never feel bad about winning.
That's very American. Anyway, we have to wrap this up. We've talked too long. I only have so much patience for editing.
Don't edit.
She's a professional.
That's right! I'm a professional, damn it. Anyway, Aurelia, thank you so much for coming on and talking. And I think we probably weren't too mean to you, so.
Yeah, we didn't even yell at you.
Well, it was very civil from... better than the chat room, actually. I got yelled at more in the chat room.
It's because I burned myself out in the chat room.
This has happened more than once, actually. We're expecting, like, fiery Ellie and Arrow, and they're just kind of like, But no, I appreciate it. I hope you will come back again and definitely come back and tell us what you think about Landmark once it's out in the new year.
Definitely. And thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. Ellie, thank you as usual for coming on.
Absolutely. It's fun, as always.
You can find the podcast online at leorblog.com. Click on podcast, Cat Context Podcast, in the main menu, or you can go directly to leorblog.com/Cat Context Podcast, but that's very long, so just go and click on it in the menu. You can find Ellie at thatangrydwarf.com, as well as on Twitter at thatangrydwarf. You can find me at Liores, Liores. We love feedback. Please send us emails, leave us comments, talk to us on Twitter. Anywhere, everywhere you see us, send a carrier pigeon. We want your feedback. We will answer questions. And I think we're going to be coming up on like sort of an end of the year roundup of our favorite games of the year. So now it's December. Start thinking about it. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
I got nothing.
I've been working on it already. I've already written up my game.
Thanks
so I hope
for
you're
telling
thinking
us
about
that
it.
I was going to have to do that.
You got 2 weeks. It's okay.
Did we have predictions from last year? I feel like we should have had a prediction show so that now we can... Maybe we weren't sure if we were going to still be around in a year.
Maybe. Well, now this year you do a prediction show, for sure.
I predict that there will still be a podcast at the end of the year.
That's good. Good. I like that prediction. Yeah, we can do a prediction show so we can all, I don't know, shout wrong at each other.
Super wrong. Yeah, we need some good sound effects.
Yeah, we'll think, but maybe we'll do it. We'll do a drunk end of the year show. It's got potential. Anyway, thank you very much for watching, everybody, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with more talking about games. Bye.
Bye.